Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servo-Didio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Also, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Please send any questions, updates, or show guests to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Also, check out my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, on Amazon. And if you'd like an autographed copy, you can also send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Well, tonight I have such an incredible show planned. On the line, I have Lori Estes. She is the founder of SOBS, Stories of Babies Born Still, and the organizer of the USCC. United States Cuddle Cot Campaign Initiative. She lives in Florida with her husband and three children. Her passion for the baby loss community began after her first child was stillborn in 1986 at full term due to a true knot in the umbilical cord. Originally from a small town in northern Michigan with limited grief support services, she mourned in silence for many years. After relocating to Florida, she began to write her story, an attempt to reconcile her unexplored feelings of loss, grief, depression, anger, and guilt over the loss of her son. After sharing some of her writings online and receiving overwhelming and heartbreaking responses from many women who had also suffered a similar loss, she decided to begin a support group. In 2010, SOBS began as a small Facebook group offering a place for families to share, grieve, honor, remember, and heal, and above all, connect with other families who suffered a similar tragedy. The group quickly grew, and in 2012, she published Wandering Purgatory. The story recounts her heartbreaking loss and the guilt, depression, and anger that affected her for several years after, and how she finally found the courage to explore those feelings deeper and create a positive legacy in honor of her son. Desperately wanting to do more to help other families, SOBS became a nonprofit in 2013 in hopes to raise awareness regarding pregnancy and infant loss. Realizing she would need funds to continue her vision, SOBS became an official 501c3 in 2014. That same year, the United States Cuddle Cot Campaign Initiative was born, and countless families now have the chance to spend precious time with their babies gone too soon. Today, Lori continues to advocate and educate regarding infant loss while surrounding grieving families in love and support. Lori, welcome to Insight into Healing. It's such an honor to have you on my show this evening.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be asked to share about this topic that's so close to my heart.
Yes. And, you know, once I heard of this story and of this product and of all of the 501c3, I really felt it's such a needed discussion to have, such a tough discussion to have, but one that so many women, so many families, unfortunately, suffer from.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because when you start to talk about it, all the people, so many people around you, you know, it gives them the strength or to open up and share, you know, and you'd be surprised how many people you know yourself who have, you know, had a similar journey. I mean, for me, I didn't, like, my grandmother had a baby that passed, and I didn't even know that even after my son passed. For several years, she never talked about it, because back then it was just really something that was very taboo, and nobody talked about it, let alone, you know, open discussions like we're having now, which is so important, I think, to the healing process.
Yes, I definitely think it is so important to bring it up, and I think, you know, we understand it is a very hard topic, and people, what do I say? How do I comfort someone? And I think it's just being there, but being able to bring it up and just to sit with it, and also to find a way of support and having that team and community behind you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. If you can have somebody who's close to you that will companion your grief, and it's a hard thing because tears are uncomfortable for people, and, you know, people, like you said, people don't know really what to say, but really, if you can just be there, hold their hand, and say, you know, I am here for you, I may not say the right things, but just know that I'm here for you, that's the best thing, just to know that you've got somebody there beside you.
Yes, yes, I know before the show we were speaking about the differences between grieving, depression, and also this type of grieving, a grieving of a loss that happens so quickly of someone, of a family member that you've only known for such a short period of time, and what a different type of grieving that is. And I think grieving is hard for anyone, people that are suffering from it, and though the loved ones around them. But this type of grieving, too, is also so hard to grasp.
Absolutely, yes, because when you go from, you know, you're so blindsided, first of all. When it happened to me, I was only married a year, you know, new bride, and the only thing I ever wanted to do was be a mom, and I got pregnant, and everything was perfect, and then the day came when they said there's no heartbeat, and I was totally dumbfounded and befuddled. I didn't understand that, because as women, we're educated early on about miscarriage and things like that, and that's devastating in its own way. But most of us actually believe that, you know, after you pass that 3-month mark, you're kind of in the safe zone, you know, and everybody gets a baby after that. Now that baby could be born with, you know, health issues, but, you know, I pretty much believe everybody had a baby after that. So when they told me that my son was going to be stillborn, it didn't even register in my 19-year-old mind what that could even mean. What does that mean? Stillborn, born silent, I think is the terms the doctor used. And to me, I thought, oh, what does that mean? He's not going to be able to talk? I mean, I honestly did not know what the term stillborn meant. So once we start talking about it and opening up about it, it just really kind of, you know, all the stuff that we learn later in life, you know, if I just had a little bit of a heads up that it exists and it's out there, you know, you wouldn't be, first of all, this such a taboo subject and afraid to talk about it. And second of all, you wouldn't feel so blindsided, you know, when something like this enters your life.
Yes. I think it also brings up different types of, you know, old wives' tales, or, you know, people feel about different things. They don't want to talk about things. They don't want to jinx or anything like that. But I think it's so important. It's not about jinxing or not believing, but I think it's being able to know all the different things that are possible and being well-educated.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And then going back to when you said about the grief, when you go from planning a future to a funeral in a heartbeat, it's just like you don't even know how to do it. Nobody's even told you how to do it. And sometimes, you know, people look at you and they think, oh, gosh, your baby, you know, you lost your baby a year ago. Why are you still grieving? You lost your baby 10 years ago. Why are you still grieving? And in reality, literally, and I don't mean this to sound depressing, but literally there is something new to grieve for that baby all the time, you know, their first birthday, when they were supposed to start school, you know, when they start, which should start driving, and when, maybe when they turn 18 and going off to college. And these things are always in the back of your mind, so it's always like something new. And it's a healthy, positive evolution of the grief if you can recognize it and hold space for it. If people, you know, try to smother that, then it doesn't serve the purpose that you need to help heal your heart. And then that's when we get into all these other, you know, coping mechanisms that can be less healthy, addictions, whether it's shopping, you know, medication, drinking, whatever it may be. You know, those are the things that manifest in that way if we don't let that grief, you know, honor that grief and hold space for it.
Yes. And I would think to say for people maybe who have not experienced or don't understand that type of grief of a future that is not happening. It's almost, you know, sometimes when people to some degree lose a loved one at a certain age or you know, there's a breakup, it's a different, of course, degree of grieving, but it's still of that future, of that loss, of that ideal, so that potential of what could have happened. And it's okay if it, you know, we don't know exactly what it would have been, but it's the representative, it's the anniversaries, it's the different milestones that are so important that have to be, I feel, have to be honored and acknowledged.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, if you can have a safe person that you can do that with, that just makes all the difference in the world. And us talking about it really opens up people's hearts to be able to companion people, you know, who might be on this journey. Because for me, I mean, I think about how I was before it happened to me, and I think I, like I said, I was so naive, but I think I was also very selfish. Like, I don't think I would have, why would I put myself into such a situation that's so sad? You know, why would I do that? Well, now I see, you know, we need people need people. We need each other. No, you know, that old saying, no man's an island, but we need each other to sound and to hear our story and to bear witness to it, to get, you know, to that healing stage.
Yes. Yes, so support and being able to have empathy And just being there, not having to say anything, just being there is just so powerful enough for someone that's suffering.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Which is,
How does your organization work, and how has this all been put together? Because there's so many different layers to it.
Right. Yeah, I know. And again, when I envisioned my life, I never envisioned that I would be, running a support group or putting together a 501c, because all the stuff that goes involved with that is just so overwhelming and time consuming sometimes, and the books and balancing. And I'm not real good with numbers, so all this stuff has been very interesting, a learning curve to me. But when we started SOBS, for me, it was 20 years after I lost my son, and I was just thinking, the computer is such a way to reach out to people, and wouldn't it be great if we could have a support group online that was tailored just to this type of loss? Because, again, miscarriage is heartbreaking, devastating, and I can't imagine the heart of a mother who didn't get to hold her baby or see that face or know whether it was a boy or a girl. That has its own different, heartbreaks. Stillbirth is a little bit different because, you go through all that labor and that delivery, and I'm not saying one's worse or more devastating. They're equally heartbreaking. But to be able to have somebody who's been down your road and know exactly what you've, not exactly, but similar to what you've gone through, and to be able to connect with that person, and you can say, hey, when I didn't want to see my baby at first because I was afraid what he would look like, things like that that maybe quite a miscarriage mom wouldn't quite understand, but a stillbirth mom does. And that's a guilt that some of these moms carry in their heart, why didn't I have the strength to see my baby? So, I got to thinking, we really need a platform where just mothers of stillbirth can connect, families of stillbirths. They could come at 2 in the morning when they're home crying and there's nobody there to hear their story or to, be with them. So we started the support group, we started the support group. I was actually talking to another mother online. She's actually one of our admins now, Shelby, and she's amazing. She's been with us since the beginning. And, I was like, we need to really do this. So we started putting it together, and we just, started sharing it. And in a very short time, we had over 2,000 members. I think now we've got like maybe 5,000 some members. And, from there, just being on the board, you see all the topics and everything that parents, that are heavy on their hearts and what they want to talk about. And a lot of times it's a mirror image of what you're feeling. So just seeing somebody else discussing it, in open empowers you. So that's how we kind of got the support group started. And one time on the support group, we had a mom from the UK share about a cuddle cot. And then actually it was called a cold cot. And I thought, first of all, I don't like that name. And second of all, I'm interested. I want to know, how other countries are doing it differently. So I started to research it a little bit, and I got in touch with the company. And It happened to be that they were coming to the U.S. to, of all things, to attend a funeral expo because they had been trying for a while to get some hospitals on board. They had done some calls, out of the blue to some U.S. hospitals, and they weren't getting any calls back. So I guess they had thought maybe if we come over on and do a funeral expo, we can get in that way and kind of, educate the public. Well, it happened to be he was coming over, and so I asked if I could meet with him, and he drove down, it was in North Carolina, he drove down to Florida and actually brought a cuddle cot. And, we talked about it, and I had mentioned to him, I love this idea. The thought process is amazing. The name is a little bit putting off, though, and I think that they went back and they rethought that, and then they changed it to the cuddle cot. But the biggest thing that became so important to me is, all the people, so I started talking to moms from the UK, and they're, because we have, in SOBS, we have members from all over the world, connecting with us. So I started talking to some of the moms in the UK, and they started telling us, it was amazing. It made me feel, because they had a cuddle cot set up in the room, it made them feel like there was a place for their baby. There was a space on this earth, especially for their unique circumstance, which when it happened to me, there wasn't even a bassinet in the room. So I felt like there was no place for my baby to be or to go, for me to even, collect my thoughts and spend a few minutes. And so I think it's very important, first of all, to let families know that you're ready to support them in this way and that there is this device, this tool to help. Now, they don't have to use it. I mean, there's some families, like I said, who don't want to see their baby, and that's okay, too. I get it. That it's a hard decision. But for the families that do, the baby, because they're so delicate, they start to change really quickly. And that's a lot of the parents' fear, too, is like, what is the baby going to look like? What is he going to look like in an hour or things like that? So, you know, in talking to moms in the UK, you know, they said it was amazing because I got to just sit and collect my thoughts for a few minutes, and then I decided, oh, well, I want to rock my baby, or I want to sing to my baby. You know, those things that you wouldn't even think of in the moment of the delivery and seeing your baby or not for the first time. So it just really kind of, I just really had to bring this initiative to the United States, because in talking to mothers here, one of the biggest things that we find that moms, their regret is that they didn't spend enough time with their baby. They didn't spend more time with their baby. And for me, it was the same way, because I had only seen my son for probably, I guess, about 30 seconds. And you know, they had laid him in my arms. And my nurses, don't get me wrong, my doctors were amazing. I think that they were just doing what they had been taught to do or what they thought maybe was best. You know, and the nurse came over and she laid him in my arms. And he was just so sweet and so precious. And I didn't even imagine that he would look so, I guess, perfect and baby-like. I think I had all these horrors that I had stirred up in my mind, because when at that time, before he was born, they didn't know why his heart had stopped. So I think I thought, oh, you know, I was afraid. And so when I seen him, I was just like, oh, you know, and I just put my head back and I just started sobbing. And I think the nurse thought that was all I could take, and she thought I was overwhelmed, so she just gathered him up and took him away, and I never saw him again. So for me, one of my greatest regrets is that I never unwrapped him and looked at his fingers and looked at his toes and, you know, did all those things that new parents do, you know, just marvel over the simple perfection that is their baby, you know. And so that was, and one of the things, too, that always goes back in my head is I always think, yes, they told me he was a boy, but did I see he was a boy? I mean, not that they were being dishonest or anything. It's just things in a mother's heart that you carry. And so that's why it became so, so important for me to get to try and get, even if we couldn't get the cuddle cots in over here, at least to get hospitals thinking and talking and changing their policy.
Yes. Well, I think it gives the parents, the mother, an option. It gives her something to choose from. And I think it's just so powerful. And I think it's so important to have that, to be able to have that chance to do that, and also to honor the baby, to have the cuddle cot if that's what they choose. How does that all put together? Do hospitals have that? Do you have to request it? How does that work?
Okay, so right now there's probably about, I think, 300 cuddle cots in the United States, and that's just from 2014 when we started educating hospitals and people. So right now, basically, we have a lot of families are raising funds for cuddle cots, and they donate them to their hospitals. And at first, hospitals were like, you know, okay, well, thank you, but we really don't know that this would be beneficial for us because, you know, we don't we pack our babies in ice, for instance. And it's like, oh, gosh, you know, as a mom, come on. Now, let's just think about that. How does that feel in your heart, you know, knowing that this is, you know, that there's this better option out there and they're still being archaic and packing babies in ice? Or, you know, our hospitals would tell us, we send our babies to the morgue, which in of itself is very distressing to parents. You know, so this is why parents, mainly it's the parents who really drove this campaign, because they realized the importance of it. And the hospitals were a bit hesitant, not really ready to get on board. Now we're getting a lot of hospitals contacting and saying, you know, hey, we want a cuddle cot. What can we do? So what we did is we started a 501c, you know, which is a project off of SOBS, so that families could raise funds for a cuddle cot to honor their baby. So they could have events or however they wanted to do it. You know, a restaurant would sponsor a night, you know, dinners towards their cuddle cot, things like that. And plus, people feel a lot better giving to an official 501c type thing. So that's why we kind of went in that direction. And it's been really great. It kind of helps get the word out and, you know, people kind of feel a little bit more comfortable with donating to an official 501c. A lot of the hospitals right now has received theirs as a gift from families. We do have several hospitals now in the recent weeks who are calling and saying they want them. So unfortunately, no, not every hospital has one. That is our goal, because there is 5,248 registered hospitals in the United States. Our goal is to make sure that every single hospital has a cuddle cot. And it's not that every single hospital delivers babies, but every single hospital has the potential to be touched by a tragedy, an illness, an injury, a SIDS baby, you know, something like that. And those families deserve that time as well. So to answer your question, yes, not every hospital in the United States has one, but we're trying to get there. We really are.
Yes. So would the hospital notify a family if they knew that the child was stillborn, that, you know, this is an option that you have, or would the family know about that beforehand going into, you know, going into for labor?
Right. So the hospital pretty will tell the families, you know, we have a cuddle cot available if you want to use it, or, you know, it's an option. But a lot of times, just through our networking, I can't tell you how amazing the networking of families we have gotten through all this. Just, it's just amazing. There'll be a cuddle cot in one area of the country or state, and somebody is going to deliver, like, in another area of the state, and that hospital doesn't happen to have a cuddle cot, but this organization does. And literally, they will lend it out. And so I have seen so many stories since we've started of things like that, you know, people going out of their way to make sure that a family who's requesting a cuddle cot has one. Because when a family goes to the hospital, the families, it's interesting because in this day and age, we're so educated. We are an educated people, and so people, when they know something like this is going to happen, you know, either if the baby's going to be anencephalic or several other things, they'll start educating themselves. And then they'll go to their hospital and they'll say, well, there's this cuddle cot. Do you have one? And the hospital will be like, no, we don't even really know what that is. So then that starts the hospital educating, but it's usually not in time for their delivery. So the families start looking and talking, and they usually come to me. And so we'll put a note out on our wall saying, you know, we have a family in need. And it's just amazing. It fills my heart every single time. It's just beyond compare. We have some great groups and some great families that we're working with. So,
I mean, how powerful. I mean, is that what life is all about? I mean, just
absolutely.
To see people working, it gives me chills. It's just, those are the beautiful stories. I would love people to see how people are helping people and coming together and being so supportive in such a time of need.
Absolutely, yes. And that's what fills our heart, too, and that's why we keep doing it. For example, today we have a cuddle cot that was supposed to be donated. It's supposed to be donated on Friday, but unfortunately, shipping errors, things like that, it's not going to arrive in time. And so the family, the organization, Still Standing 5K, something out of Virginia, we looked around a little bit, and there happened to be one close by, so they're going to lend theirs for their dedication ceremony. So they have something there to show the public to start that education process. You know, and again, even little things like that make such a huge difference, and you're not walking this journey alone. You see all these families and these networks, because when it happened to me, I felt like a leper, actually. First of all, I had never heard of it, so I had to be the only one in the world it ever happened to, and what does that make me, you know? So just to know that there's this huge network who's got your back, and they're out there, and they're going to support you, even if the hospitals aren't quite on board yet, or even if the hospitals don't quite know about it yet, you've got families out there who are going to support you, you know, and they'll drive miles to do it. So it's really amazing.
So how does someone, if they want to help to do what you're doing, be a part of it, raise funds or help connect people? And also, how about if you're a family that needs one? How does everyone get in contact? Where should they go?
Okay, sure. So we do have a website. It's called www.storiesofbabiesbornstill. You can reach us that way. We also have a Facebook page, the United States Cuddle Cot Campaign Initiative, and we get a lot of messages through that page. And we actually do have a loaner that we loan out to hospitals who don't have one. Usually, you know, we'll have a family contact us or a hospital say, we have a delivery that's going to happen tomorrow, you know, in 2 days, we need a cuddle cot. So we do our absolute best to overnight ship, you know, and kind of give them a little education about how to set it up and things that they're going to need. And we've loaned ours probably out, I don't know, probably about 15 times since we've started here. But as far as wanting to purchase or to get involved or fundraise or educate, again, you can reach us on the Facebook page. You can reach us on the website. You know, we have all kinds of pamphlets and information that we can give out to you. We have a very nice video on there that one mom tells her story about her journey and, you know, how she was kind of blindsided about the whole stillbirth and how the cuddle cot really helped her. And it's hard for people to understand who are not in the situation. It's funny, I was just talking to my dental hygienist yesterday, and she was telling me, I was explaining to her what we did, and she's like, I don't really understand why would families want to spend time, and so I started telling her and educating her, and she, after we were done with the conversation, she said, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. So even just educating, if somebody wants to get involved, just to educate and not, you know, that is the biggest thing right now is educate. And, of course, fundraising. You know, we have several projects that families are fundraising. And some of them, you know, they've been working on their fundraising for probably, you know, maybe 2 years. Some of them raise their funds in a quick hurry. So if there's a cuddle cot that if you wanted to just donate to a cuddle cot and you don't have a fundraising project you're working on, we've got those you can donate to. If you are in a place that you want to donate a whole cuddle cot, we've got several nonprofit hospitals on our list who would love to have a cuddle cot. They don't have the funds though. So we've got several ways that you can help out. You can just, you know, reach us on our webpage or the Facebook page.
Because I was just thinking, I'm always thinking of ways to help and to network and to move forward. How could people in their own communities contact their hospital, contact their representatives to really fundraise, to push? You know, hospitals have all these benefits for cuddle cots, for different people in their communities to do walks, to do, you know, auction nights and stuff, just even if they don't know a family, just to do it for cuddle cots. I don't know about this question, but how many cuddle cots do you think, if it was ideal, that each hospital should have?
You know, for me, I'm saying each hospital should have two, because we've already heard of several hospitals who have one cuddle cot and sadly they have another demise or loss at the same time. So one family has the option, one family doesn't. You know, and when we first started, hospitals were, oh, we don't have a loss that often, that type of thing. So we really advocate that every hospital have at least two. You know, I mean, just because you never know when it's going to happen, and we want all families to have that option. But when you said, you know, how do families, yes, it would be great if they would talk to their hospitals, because like the manufacturer, we had tried when we had the very first one in the United States, we contacted several hospitals, you know, just cold calls, if you will, and said, you know, hey, we have this new tool. We want to come and talk to you about it. And they were very standoffish. I mean, we had so many phone calls that weren't answered, emails that never got responded to. I mean, I just think it's a tough subject. And unfortunately, hospitals, some of the feedback that we were getting is hospitals really don't like people to know that babies die at their hospital. Unfortunately, that's life, and it happens, and we need to be able to support those families just as much as the families who deliver and take home a healthy baby. So yes. What we advocate is that, so in trying to make these cold calls to hospitals, we realized that this wasn't the way. So then we started reaching out to families, and see, families already have a connection with their hospital, with their doctor, with the staff. So that's where the real connection, the real training, the real education, and the real placements happen. I mean, people think that it's with us, but it's not. We just kind of organized everything and give them the information and the tools, and the families are amazing. They're the ones who are making this happen.
And I would think, I mean, honestly, every police station should have them, EMS workers, firemen, because unfortunately they go to different sites too where these things could happen. I think it would be very important to have these, you know, as they have other safety kits in different places. It's just as necessary. I mean, how much is a cuddle cot?
Yeah, so each cuddle cot for a charity and an organization, a nonprofit, it's $2,764. I believe if you're not a nonprofit, it's $3,064. The company gives you like a $300 price break for charities and nonprofits. So in of itself, it's not a whole lot of money when you consider hospital equipment. But then again, when we have nonprofit hospitals or hospitals that are working on a limited budget, you know, it's really they're really down to the bottom line. And, you know, we try to make them see, but this is not just for this event. You're saving your hospital a ton of money in grief services, you know. If you can give this family a healthy start to their grieving process, it's going to decrease all that those needs, you know, in the future, mental health, you know, whatever else, you know, that family may need to get through it, divorces and all this other stuff that is just snowballs off.
Addiction.
Yes, addiction. And in my case, I think, like I shared with you, you know, back when it happened to me in 86, the doctors, you know, they prescribed Ativan and said, oh, go home, don't think about it, it's very sad, and you can have other babies. And so that starts this whole other mindset, which, you know, think, well, I can't just grieve and mourn and cry, that's not healthy. So, you know, so you're exactly right. It does, it's a whole other thing, you know, if we could just get hospitals to realize that.
Yes, yes. Well, we're at the end of the show, and I just wanted to, again, thank you so much. It's such an educational, such a powerful necessity to this product, and what you're doing is so commendable.
Okay, thank you so much for taking the time to discuss this topic. Like I said, it's heartbreaking and scary, but we appreciate anybody who's willing to talk and hear our story. So, yeah,
definitely. And I would love to have you on again and have some updates and some more progress, definitely, of what's going forward. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. Remember, Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.